All right, we want to address speaking to diverse political audiences and legislators. The social psych literature on introductions basically says, here's a chance to persuade people that this person's an expert without that person actually having to call himself an expert and look like a narcissistic fool. With Eric Sterling, I feel like the fool. Here's a guy who has spent his whole life, if I had to sum it up in a couple of words, fairness and reason. We've seen him just do amazing things about criminal law. He's been president of the Criminal Justice Society since 1989. He's got more legal awards than I can count. We worked on the MPP board together and got out of it together. The man is just an astounding contributor and spent his whole life doing this. I feel like I can't do him justice and I don't want to take away his time. So let's have a warm, normal welcome for Eric Sterling.
Mitch, thank you. Can people hear me? Mitch, thank you very much.
It's really a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be here, everyone. It is enormously gratifying to me to have an opportunity to speak to Normal at this lobby day. Mitch didn't say that in 1976, when I met Keith and Bob Randall in Philadelphia, that it changed my life. I'd just like a show of hands. How many of you has your membership in Normal changed your life? Right. You know, for me, I was finishing law school, and I became involved with Normal, and I've been involved my entire legal career, my entire adult life, and it has been such a rewarding pursuit for me. I'm sure many of you have this experience that, you know, you're meeting people, and, you know, what do you do? And people sort of say, well, thank God, you know, God bless you. What you're doing is really good. And to have that kind of feedback from your work is a rare thing, especially if you're a lawyer. And I am so thankful to Keith Strop. I'm so thankful for Normal for setting me on a course to do this work. The first conference I went to was in December 1976 at the Hyatt Regency Capitol Hill. And Jimmy Carter was not yet president. Gerry Ford was still the president. Carter had been elected, and decriminalization had been part of his agenda. And Normal is in the, you know, premier hotel on Capitol Hill. It's a new Hyatt Regency hotel. And I'm totally blown away. This is the marijuana movement. You know, this was amazing. You know, and then to go to the continuing legal education programs as having been a member of the bar for exactly 2 months, and to see Michael Kennedy and Michael Stepanian and Jerry Goldstein and Alan Ellis and Dick Atkins. I mean, I could name men and women who were these phenomenal lawyers and, geez, someday if I could ever be in their ranks or, you know, then I will have accomplished, you know, and completed sort of my legal preparation. And to be, you know, here at Normal, you know, today is just a thrill. I want to talk to you then about sort of, you know, what we're here about, which is lobbying and talking to diverse audiences, because I've done it a little bit. So the thing that you want to first think about, you know, is why are you speaking? Who are you speaking to? And, you know, did you get an invitation? Are you setting it up? And so here are the different, tried to think of what are some of the kinds of contexts that you might be speaking to. And so, just kind of going through the list, you know, obviously you want to sort of generally think about, you know, who you're educating. And just as you look at that first list there, in terms of your general audiences, you've got a whole bunch of sort of different actors. Let's take a detour for a moment and talk about business, because I have here from an op-ed I wrote for Forbes. Lauren, if you could share this just on this side of the room here, and I'll give you a bunch, and I'll give you some, and you can sort of pass them back. And so, for a long time, you know, I've been, you know, it's a question of sort of thinking about who are the allies? Who brings muscle into the legislative process? And, you know, that's really the business community. You know, if you're the Speaker of the House and the head of the Chamber of Commerce calls you up, or the head of the Association of Manufacturers, you're going to take the call. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you're going to take the call. And so we need to speak language to sort of mobilize them. And so I'm a full-out drug legalizer. Anybody here a full-out drug legalizer? Okay, so we're not just talking about pot, we're talking about prohibition. And prohibition hurts all of America. It hurts the rich more than it hurts the poor. Because the rich, their investments are all being stunted by the enormous costs that prohibition generates. And when we get the rich on our side, no matter what your politics are, they're going to help change prohibition. And so this is an example of speaking to an audience that we usually don't sort of think about talking to. These are other kinds of contexts. I'll talk about them now. So obviously, when you're going to be speaking, you got to do homework. You want to talk to the organizer. You know, when Alan said, "Eric, will you talk to me?" I call Alan. So what are we going to talk about? You know, what's the venue like? I knew this venue. You know, I asked the gentleman here for a lavalier mic so I can walk around. I don't have to stand at the podium and be boring. I can move around. I can pass stuff out. If you have that kind of flexibility, then you want to look for it. Sometimes you have to sit at the table. You know, shit, you're sitting at the table. You know, you can barely project. If you have the chance, stand up, even if you're at the table, because you project, because you can breathe more easily, because you can be more dynamic. So when you have the chance, always stand when you're going to speak. You want to know sort of what's it part of, you know, is the speaking thing, is it part of a panel, is it part of, you know, where does it all fit in the process? So you have an idea, are you beginning the thing, are you ending the thing, how large is the audience, how much literature do you need to bring? So those are, you know, think. You speak to a class. How many of you have been invited to speak to a class? So, you know, obviously, common kind of context. Students are very interested. You know, so you want to figure out, you know, does this fit into a syllabus? You want to know, does the teacher, you know, are the students going to be graded on what you said? Is it part of an assignment? Or are you part of a show? Is it entertaining? Can you suggest relevant readings? You're a tremendous help when you tell the teacher or the professor, here are a couple of good articles. Assign these. Prep the students. This will help them ask, you know, good questions. Panel discussion. We got here. We're all set for a panel. Well, are you going to be one of five, one of three? Understand what the dynamics are and how much time you're going to have. Think about what you can specially contribute to the panel. You know, who else is going to be on the panel? Is it going to be three other legalizers? What do you want to focus on? Is it a marijuana piece you want to focus on, a health piece, a criminal justice piece? Thinking about what's your expertise, what economist, national security background, what is the piece you're speaking on behalf of? So student population, think about what the piece you can contribute. Also, what's the role of the moderator going to be? Is the moderator going to introduce you and just let you go? Is the moderator going to sit there with a clock and say, you know, you got 1 minute left? Is the moderator going to ask questions? How's the Q&A piece of it all going to work? Literature, also known as collateral. Every event you go to, you got to bring literature because you want people to contact you. You got to have contact information. And then at the end, you know, how often people come up to you and say, oh, your speech was so great. I mean, wonderful. How do I get in touch with you? Collect cards, collect names and addresses, because you're building a political movement. That's ultimately what you're trying to do. In your literature, you want to be careful. You want it to look good. A lot of literature looks like shit. You don't want shitty looking literature. No typos. No stoner profiles. Okay? Always overdress. Even if it's a rally, if you're a guy, put on a jacket, put on a tie. We're trying in part to break stereotypes when we're representing normal. That's one of the challenges. Think about all the basic tools about speaking. When you stop, you gather people's attention. Gustav Mahler, the composer, said, if the audience is bored, slow down. That slowing down puts emphasis into what you're trying to say. You don't have to speak a mile a minute to make your point heard by everybody. That's a sign of a little bit of nervousness. You're not in control. So we're conveying in our body language, in our tempo. You know, am I in control of myself? Do I understand the material? Are you going to be confident in what I have to say? Don't read your PowerPoints. So now we're in a debate. Here's another kind of context. We'd like you to debate somebody. So, okay, you've got to be respectful of your opponent. You've got to be, and your opponent's going to, I want to just give you some excerpts from a debate. How many of you know who Congressman Bob Barr is from Georgia? Raise your hand. Right. You know, so Barr was one of the prosecutors of Bill Clinton at the impeachment trial. You know, former U.S. attorney, snarling, attacked kind of guy. And so a Georgetown Criminal Law Review asked me to debate Bob Barr on the legalization of drugs. And so, he's the congressman, he goes first. Then I go, So at the end, the moderator says, thank you, Congressman Barr. You just heard Eric Sterling say that there's a need for treatment and regulation instead of the current focus on law enforcement. How would you respond, Congressman Barr? This is the transcript. Well, I do think that after listening to Eric, that Alice in Wonderland is alive and well, and she's standing right over here to my left. $34 million, that's all it's going to take. He took a number out of context that I used. Isn't that wonderful? $34 million. Juan, the moderator, the best way to answer your question is not to engage in some Pollyannish expedition of some Alice in Wonderland nirvana out there. I know that's mixing three or four different metaphors, but what the heck? That's at one point, Pollyannish, the thing moves on. We've talked about the Swiss. And then here's Barr speaking to me again. I have learned, however, that the Clinton approach to debate is alive and well. Notice the Clinton-esque twist of a turn that Eric uses. In response to the question whether or not any society has tried drug legalization, he has succeeded. He said, aha, well, we can't answer that because no society has comprehensively tried it. I suppose the only time they will have comprehensively tried it is when he decides that they've met his criteria. Typical Clinton argument. So this is the way he goes on. So,
he came around.
Well, I, at one point sort of he said, talking about Barr, he said, there's a public health argument to be made. It's appropriate for law and for the government to take, but where's the balance? And I wanted to read actually something that Mr. Barr said at the Conservative Political Action Conference on January 23rd, 1999, in his speech against the onslaught, defending our vanishing right to privacy in America. And he goes right to this point. Mr. Barr told them, and I'm not going to be able to do it with all the appropriate inflection, I'm sure. He said, history, from the decline of the Roman Empire to the rise of Nazi Germany, it shows that taking away privacy is the first step in a series of dominoes that ends in a complete surrender of individuality and free will. Barr, sounds eloquent to me. Thank you. I would ask you to read it, but in the interest of time, I'll continue. After all, if the government always knows where you are, what job you are seeking, what doctor you are seeing, where you travel, how you spend your money, and how to defend yourself, and blah, blah, blah. And so I go on and I continue to quote him. And I say, these rights we've been talking about here, Mr. Barr, and I happen to think Congressman Barr has been a leader, for example, in this area. He's been one of the most courageous members of Congress in resisting Echelon and Carnivore, and completely excessive taking of power by the FBI where they don't need it. There are many areas where I think that Congressman Barr is really far-seeing. What is so troubling to me is that he doesn't see that the principle he believes in apply to individuals who choose to use drugs. Barr later went to work for the Marijuana Policy Project as a lobbyist for marijuana legalization. Now, I would like to take all the credit for that conversion. But notice the difference in tone as he sneers and sneers. I mean, you want to get up and like bite his ankle, But, Eric this and Eric that. Congressman Barr, Mr. Barr. That's, in a debate, who ends up winning that debate? Not the sneering congressman, the wise guy who doesn't have anything to say but insults, but the gentleman. Building a coalition. A lot of our work involves building coalitions. Coalitions need clear objectives. If it's state legislation, what's your target of the coalition? Make sure that gets worked out. You've got other kinds of things to work on. If you're a student, you've got campus enforcement policy. Coalition politics are very hard. There's the challenge of the decision-making process. All of these kinds of things are challenges. Everybody wants to be the leader. Everybody wants to be the spokesperson. Let the best speakers be the spokespersons. Doesn't matter what group they're from. If they're able to articulate your issues well, if they're good, let them be the spokesperson. And that involves, you got to make compromises. You're a coalition. Recruiting allies. In your groups, in your coalition, brainstorm. Who might be allies? So thinking about what their concerns are. There will be people who won't join you. Don't say, oh, those chicken shits. The NRA, why don't they get involved with it? We can complain all we want about people who aren't our allies. Wasted energy. Don't waste our time. You're going to have a press conference. Be very careful thinking about this. Do you have something worth having a press conference about? Don't call a press conference if it isn't news. And essentially, what is the essence of news? Real news is the thing that brings out the response, holy shit, that's news. If you hear, holy shit, that's news. Otherwise, oh God, it's the same old thing. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah is not news. Most of what's in the newspaper is blah, blah, blah. So you could flip to page 1 to page 10 and it's blah, 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 blah. Don't try to call a press conference for blah, blah. But you can create occasions. Think about, is there something you can study? All you essentially need to have a press conference is one fact in which somebody will say, holy shit. 1 in 3 black men under correctional control. Holy shit. Blacks are 8 times more likely to be incarcerated for drug offenses than whites. Holy shit. All you need is a study. You put it in, it doesn't have to be a one-page study, obviously, but getting to your conclusion. But the point is, you've got something where somebody will respond, and if it's on message, it's part of your process, think about it. Think about the location. You want to have photo ops. Think about all of that when you sort of organize your thing. How many of you have gotten calls from the press who want to know what Normal thinks about something? Raise your hand. Okay, so reporter calls this. Here I am, so-and-so. I'm calling from the Globe Star Gazette. What's Normal's reaction to blah, blah, the governor just said blah, blah, blah? And your first reaction is, oh, my God, I got to make up something right here on the spot. Don't do that. Say, excellent, what's your name? Can I call you back in 5 minutes? Yeah, okay, sure. Okay, hang up the phone. You got the number. Now you stop and sort of say, what is the one most catchy thing that I can say in response to what the governor did? What's my message? Let me take a few. Maybe I want to go and look up what the governor actually said. Not hear what the reporter said the governor said. What did the governor say? What are other people saying about it? What are my allies saying about it? So I call him back in 10 minutes. I say, Governor Smith's comments reveal that he's changed his mind on marijuana legalization. We're 100% behind him and we're endorsing him for re-election. Now, unlikely you're going to say that, but that's news, that's catchy. Normal endorses Smith. Maybe that'll kill him, I don't know. But, think about what you want to say. How's it punchy? Now, rallies, we're going to have a rally. Maybe you want to have a rally, or somebody wants to invite you at a rally. Rallies are tough audiences. They're tough places to speak. How many of you have been to a rally? We've all been to rallies. How many of you have been to a rally where there are 30 people? Fucking waste of time. If you possibly can, a 30-person rally is a defeat. You know, they called a rally. They got 30 of their friends to come. You know, they couldn't get more than 30 people. I was at an anti-drug rally on the steps of the Fairfax County Police Headquarters Saturday. There were 30 people there. They had somebody from SAMHSA. They had somebody from the governor's anti-heroin prescription opioid task force. They had, you know, some people in recovery. Had a great speaker. They had me as the wind-up speaker talking about legalizing drugs. And 30 people. You know, all the energy of the organizer goes into, you know, making sure I've got water bottles for the speaker. Do I have a sound system? If you can't build an audience, don't try to have a rally. If your friends are desperate to have a rally, think about an alternative. Well, just to say, if you think about if you have to go to a rally speech is not a lecture. You know, you want the audience to laugh, to applaud, to cheer. You know, you want to give them lines, because that's the point of a rally. It's about building energy. So your speech has got to be about sort of, we're going to win. We're going to take the state house. Marijuana is going to be legal. And everybody's going to have all the joints they can possibly want. Let's hear it. Yeah, right. You know, so free the weed. Yes, free the weed. Think about what kinds of chants you can have, you know, or call and response. But think about ways that, you know, so that the audience is engaged. It's like, thank God, I mean, I'm standing in the sun for some purpose. I'm part of this thing. You know, I'm not passive. But what are the alternatives? You can't put together a big rally on your campus, in your town, in your county, in your desert, wherever it is you're located. So on your block. So other kinds of things. Put the same energy into something else. Maybe you have a phone banking. Maybe you just turn it into a fundraising event. Have a party. You know, the same energy can be very, you know, charge everybody 10 bucks. So then, you know, so you raise 300 bucks. You haven't spent 1,000. So thinking about, you know, other kinds of ways, you know, show a movie, invite, you know, there are lots of different kinds of things. Do tabling, lots of other activities you can do that can be successful that a rally won't be. Now let's talk about lobbying and meetings and so forth. All right, so you want to choose your lobbying target. You want to pick your relevant decision maker, somebody who's going to be involved. You don't go to the state assemblyman about rescheduling marijuana because it's not her call. You don't go to the congressman about getting a state medical marijuana bill passed. It's not her call. So you got to, you know, if there's a bill in the Judiciary Committee, you target those people. Who do you target? You know, you've got many more people you can target. Pick your priorities. Praise your supporters. Thank them. Compliment them. Now you got meetings. Now your own, how many of you have met with your own state senator? How many of you your own state representative? How many of you met with your own member of Congress? How many of you met with any of your senators, U.S. senators? Splendid, splendid. I mean, that's, and how many of you have met with them, with any one of these more than 3 or 4 times? Right. You want to build relationships. My congressman, since before he ran for re-election, when I started talking about medical marijuana in the early 2000s, I've been talking about marijuana. He knows me. I'm the marijuana guy. I started telling him about something, and he said, oh, bong hits for Jesus. I mean, he made the connection, you know, but, you know, before I did, you know. You know, it's, you know, build a relationship. Build a relationship, you know. Be a source of credible information. In your meetings with them, be focused. Plan. If you've not met with the member before, you know, do some research. Do some background. How do you, you know, what, did we go to the same college? Do they have an interest in something you're interested in? Find out as much as you can about them to be able to sort of make a connection as part of, like, we're just the same folks. People like us. I'm people like you, you're people like me. We're building, because you want to build these relationships, because relationships are a key part of what the political process are. You want to have literature to leave behind. Part of your exercise, you know, I understand from Alan, you've been, you know, given sort of a checklist of a whole bunch of issues. Think about putting together what just a one or two page thing is on one bill. Now, if it's a page long, you do not have to fill the page. You don't have to have 300 words because it's a page. How tight, how efficient can your piece be to get your key points across? Plan for the meeting. One ask. You don't go in and say, I want you to reschedule. I want amnesty. I want banking, you know, and I want, you know, the tax thing. I want it all. You know, one meeting, one issue. So that, you know, we want you to co-sponsor this bill. You know, this is the argument for this bill. Think about it, you know, and that's what we're going to say. Because it just becomes too scattershot. Their time and the time of their staff is so incredibly compressed. You know, a member of Congress represents like 700,000 people. You know, a senator represents 5, 8, 30 million people. You know, they can't meet with all of you. You're lucky you've got some time. Don't waste it. Put together a delegation. You can't all speak. But you should all at least introduce yourself. You know, hi, I'm Eric Sterling. I live, you know, in the third ward. Or, hi, I'm Eric Sterling. I'm a medical marijuana patient. Or, I'm Eric Sterling. My father used medical marijuana before he died. Or whatever kind of thing that connects. But you've got someone else who's your leader. Make sure you're brief and allow the staff or the member to ask questions. Make sure you've designated before you go someone's going to take notes. And because you want to be able, you know, in the excitement of it, you're just thinking, what am I going to say next? How are they reaction? What's the body language? Make sure someone's there taking notes, recording, you know, this is what they said. This was their reaction. So you can share that with the national office. They may ask you questions. So how many people in Montana are medical marijuana patients? Don't bullshit an answer. Let me get the latest data for you. And you go and you try to find out and you get back. And that gives you a reason to get back in touch with them. You follow up, make sure you thank them. If it's your member, let's say it's a member who you really admire, who's supporting you. Then you write a letter to the editor, the local paper, saying how much, you know, you praise your friend and your ally. Another kind of context, town hall meeting. You know, the congressman or senator's going to be in the front of the room. The room's going to be packed with people. They want to talk about everything from, you know, global warming, to fracking, to Amtrak, to taxes, to guns, to abortion, to education and healthcare. So you've got to, you know, your issue is important. We know that. That's why you're here. That's why you came. But you're not entitled to monopolize the conversation. And people may not, other people may not think your issue is as important as they think theirs is. Don't get into a fight with them about that. Be respectful. Another kind of context, testimony. You're going to present, you're going to speak before a formal legislative body. It's the city council, the zoning commission, Congress. Now, in the case of Congress, you have to be invited. You can't, it's not like most other bodies where you can show up. So even if it's Congress, though, you can always submit a statement. So, have copies at the table. Make sure if you're testifying before the State Judiciary Committee, how many copies do they need? They want copies in advance. They're going to put it in everybody's folder. Staff is going to read it. Make sure you have it in advance. It doesn't have to be long. It just has to be, you know, it needs to be succinct, pointed. Make your points. Get advice from people. Consult with their allies. Think about what your unique story is. What's your unique piece? What is it that nobody else is going to say? You got 3 minutes. If there's praise you can make of the chair or a member, do it. Stop when your time is up. Don't try to talk over the buzzer. Be professional. Follow up. Encourage your allies and supporters to contact in terms of what's going on. Maybe you want to write a phone script. Stay positive. Keith, myself, Dan, Dale, many of us, we've been doing this a long time. And we do it, we love it. It's exciting. Take care of yourself, don't burn out. Make friends, have fun, and find the party in your heart. Thank you very much.
As chair of the executive board, I do a lot of shit. But I'm gonna remember one really delightful thing I got to do, and that's present Eric Sterling with the Normal Lifetime Achievement Award. Whoa. It's a grateful recognition of a lifetime dedicated to reforming unjust marijuana laws and advancing the cause of personal freedom.